Today's program is brought to you by Rolling Press, a family-run, eco-friendly printing company. For more information, visit rollingpress.com.
I'm Grace Bonney of After the Jump, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to We Dig Plants on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Alice Marcus Krieg.
And I'm Carmen DeVito.
We are Groundworks, Inc., and we design, install, and maintain gardens in and around New York City. We Dig Plants brings the culture to horticulture, and in doing so, today we're going to talk about photography in the world of plant exploration and scientific discovery. So today's guest, we met at the Garden Writers Conference. Her name is Julie Shapiro. And her resume and work are outstanding. Julie is our guest, and she has the best job in the world, I think. When I was putting the show together, I just wanted to be Julie. I just wanted to quit my life and spend my time as Julie does. But before we get into talking about what she does, let's contextualize today's show with a bit of nerdy history and our horticultural honoree of the week.
Thank you, Jack. So this week, as we were posting about, is another Harvard person. Julie works at Harvard University. Our honoree is plant explorer Frank N. Meyer. And this gentleman, a little more than 100 years ago, introduced approximately 2,500 new plants into our contemporary lives.
Soybean,
you know, different kinds of lilacs. The Meyer lemon is named after him. He emigrated from Holland to America, where he kind of changed his name to Frank Meyer, and he went to work right away for the USDA, working under a scientist by the name of Irwin Smith. Who was known internationally for his groundbreaking work in bacteriology. But Meyer had a little bit of a wanderlust, and he liked to travel. So he started working at the introduction station in Santa Ana, California, and then he started in 1905 his expeditions to Asia, and that's where he found his most productive time. He collected plants from China, from Russia, and Japan, as well as other countries. During his second expedition, from 1909 to 1912, he collected in Europe, Russia, and also in China. And then he went back again from 1913 to 1915. His final expedition was started in 1916 to 1918, and he died a sort of untimely death in June of 1918. He kind of fell off a riverboat.
That mysterious. Was mysterious, but there was a lot of political craziness going on in China at the time.
So. Yeah, and they weren't too keen on Europeans and Americans going there. But we have him to thank for so many different introductions, including the lilacs, the Meyeri lilacs, and also elms. You know, he was into studying Dutch elm disease. He was an incredible guy. We encourage you to read more about him, and I think his letters and everything are at Harvard.
Yes,
right,
so
Alice?
His photos.
And his photos, and that's the important part of this, is that he was trying to encourage people to use photography
instead of the hand illustration.
Drawing. Right, yeah. Exactly. So
he turned over all of these drawings to the Arnold Arboretum.
Yes.
And that ties in with our great friend and
Julie Shapiro.
Colleague Julie Shapiro. Julie, yes. How are you?
I am great. What a great day to listen to your your background about Frank Meyer. That's fabulous. What a nice lead in that is.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm honored to be in the same, 30-second breath with him.
40 minutes.
30 minutes. There you go. Absolutely fantastic. Listen, before we do get started, while you're on Frank Meyer, I wanted to tell you that, and I don't know if you guys have read this book, but it might be nice for your readers, your listeners to know that about 30 years ago, there was a wonderful book called Frank Meyer, Plant Hunter in Asia, written by Isabel Cunningham, and produced by Iowa Press. And it's a terrific book about the trials and tribulations of, 20th century plant hunters. And it's just fabulous. There are lovely photographs in it as well.
I'm going to have to find
that. Oh. But I'm sure you can find it somewhere in a library or on Amazon, and it really is great.
Well, one of my favorite kind of silly websites is plantexplorers.com.
Yes, it's a great site.
And it has great synopsis overviews of the Plant Explorers. And on that site, I saw lots of images of his photographic work.
Yes.
He did landscapes and buildings, not only plants, but he really contextualized the scenery and the environment.
The people. He had beautiful photographs. I was really curious to know what kind of equipment he used, because at the time he was probably using pretty boxy, heavy equipment.
Yeah, I'm sure.
He was, and you've got to remember that, these guys were producing glass slides.
Yes, right.
So on their expeditions, while they're, trying to direct themselves with their little assistance from the areas in China and all over the world where they were exploring in these hauled out canoes made of wood or floats or steamboats.
Right.
They had to haul all this stuff, and glass plates were very expensive and very heavy and very delicate.
Right. And that's what you do now for Harvard, right? You work in their herbarium.
Well, I do. I call myself a digital carpologist, which is a term that I sort of coined 10 or 15 years ago. The digital study of seed morphology and diagnostics for just photographing seed as it is in situ and under scientific conditions, so that people can really see them, breeders, horticulturists, biologists, botanists, etc. We have run into some really interesting stories and nice problems running up regarding seed and its shape and size. And I just I realized myself that I ran into a time about 15 years ago where I was getting botanists and horticulturists were saying, well, why is it? It's not important to take photographs of seeds. Our drawings are enough.
No.
And I thought, I really want to show you why drawings aren't enough. Drawings are wonderful to have as just, and photographs are just another fact to have in your bag of tricks, along with illustrations, etc.
Right.
And contextual photographs as well. It's really very important. So I just started doing that. I was very lucky to be working on a project that I collaborated with colleagues at the Arnold Arboretum at Harvard University for a number of years on a project called the SHIP Project, the Seed Herbarium Image Project. And after that, I was asked to go over to the Herbaria at Harvard on campus in Cambridge to work on another digitization project of their type specimens, this time with high-resolution cameras and high-resolution flatbed scanners to digitize type specimens and belong to this huge collaboration project called the Global Plants Initiative.
Okay, hang on.
Wait, we're getting ahead of ourselves. Yes,
I want. Let's start at ground zero, and let's talk about how you came to this, because this whole world is so it's so interdisciplinary. It's art. It's photography. It's science. It's
taxonomy.
It's plant hunting. It's history. It's so huge. So tell us how you, Julie Shapiro, came to this, because that story in itself is amazing.
Well, I started by, as a young kid, I got some plants, moved some plants from the woods of my grandfather's house into a wildflower garden, and my mom let me have this little garden. If I went back, it was probably, and to look at it now, it was, would probably be about 3 feet square, but when I was a child, it felt like it was a whole field of plants under this pink dogwood tree that I was allowed to grow there, and it was all my job to tend to them.
Uh-huh.
And these were all native plants at the time.
And this was
and
in California.
I had 20 or 30 plants there that I drew, divided, gave to friends, et cetera, as a little kid.
Right.
But I've always been into plants. My grandfather and my mom just had an affinity for plants. My dad was a photographer just in his own right, off the cuff from his, just to make the day brighter, he photographed things and gave me a camera when I was a teenager.
Okay.
And then I started taking photographs of everything, but including mostly non-people, mostly plant material and buildings and things.
Uh-huh.
And so that's how that happened. I never really went into it. When I went to school, in high school, I used to do work with hydroponics because I thought it was so cool. I thought, how could you grow plants with no soil?
Right.
So I headed up a project and studied everything I could about it, and they made me the head of the greenhouse there. So I did a hydroponic study.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happened after that? I left the plant world. I minored in it in college but went into entertainment and art and theater, and became an actor's agent in New York and Los Angeles.
And the Lower East Side, right? The Lower East Side of New York.
And then became a musician for about 30 years doing voiceovers and session work and vocal work and guitar playing in the late 70s, 80s, and 90s, I guess. I never really went back into plants until I attended a garden club lecture that I was dragged to by a friend.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sitting in the front row and saw this color combination and plant combinations that I'd never seen before. And I was just bawled over. And I was so in a trance by all of this that I got up at the end and busted my way through the front because everyone wanted to talk to this plant designer. And I said, you know, listen, if you ever need anyone to help you, I would be more than willing to do that. Because at the time, my husband had a pretty okay job, and we could do it on one salary. This was in the late 80s, early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And she looked at me and she said, oh, as a matter of fact, I just lost my assistant last week, so if you can start on Tuesday, that would be great.
Great.
So I did so, and I worked with her for a number of years. She used to grow a lot of things from seed. So that is sort of where it was concentrated with me as far as growing plants from seed. And because of that, I started paying attention to what the seed looked like, and I was absolutely flabbergasted with the shape, size, color, design of them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you showed photos, Julie, at the conference in Pittsburgh, first of all, your talk, your lecture was hands down my absolute favorite.
Yeah.
You know, most interesting. Your story.
It was enlightening. Everything.
Yeah.
Was
and your story was so interesting. That's why we wanted to have you on. And when you show those photos of the seeds, I mean, you know, I've been looking at seeds all my life and I just saw them in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just the detail, the beauty of them.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
As you were saying, the design, because Alice and I design on the macro level, you know, and to see design at that very small level.
At the very fundamental level.
Yeah.
You know,
was inspiring.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, can you imagine, just take for instance, there's a seed called Bereria. It's it grows in hot climates. So just picture this. It looks sort of like like a long conga drum, except it has ridges inside it along the outside. So it sort of looks like the back of an amplifier, and it's used that same way scientifically, where the back of amps have those metal fins on the back that dissipate heat so that they don't overheat. This seed is constructed the same darn way. I hope that's not a swear word. and the fins go in and out of this all the way around the seed so that when it's dropped on 127-degree soil, it does not desiccate until the rains come, which give it about maybe an eighth of an inch of rain, and that's all it needs. And it's done, and it's wonderful. And the embryo is saved. So, I mean, that kind of construction, not only is it beautiful, but it is so important to the life of that seed.
Its form follows function.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, that's the, you know, that's the best of art, like, and science together. And that's why I want your job. I want to be your assistant, Julie, because.
Well, it gets so bad that, I get emails and photographs from all over, my colleagues and people that I don't even know from different parts of the world saying, what is this? What is this? I just found this. What do you think this is?
Right.
Do you know what this kind of seed is? What do I do with this seed? Mm-hmm. So it's really a compliment and an honor, and many times I have absolutely no clue. But it makes me research, and I love, I'm a research hound.
Yeah,
And I love doing this. And I also like growing these things from seed, too. So I do a lot of horticulture work in growing the same things I photograph. Number one, because if they're really rare, if I get a colleague who sends me five seeds and says, see, photograph these, but see what you can do with this, because we don't have a recipe on how to germinate these. So I do little tests, freezing, thawing, outside, inside, cutting them, not cutting them. So it's really very exciting. So I set up a lab in my house. So I have a digital laboratory in my house for photographing seeds and a growing space that probably my husband was very angry that I took it away because it probably could have been a nice room, but it's not. It's a nice room now. I sort of extended myself a little bit to not just photograph seeds and study there diagnostically, but also to grow them on and to really become a part of whole genera of seeds, of plants. For instance, at the Arnold Arboretum, we've got what's called the NAPCC collections, our North American Plant Collections Consortium collections, where different arboreta around the United States have collections that they maintain. We have a number of collections of different genera. We have Stewardia collection, of course, our famous lilac collection, which everyone knows about on Lilac Sunday on Mother's Day every year, and some other collections that are very valuable, carrias, the hickories. So and the maples, that's one of our biggest collections that we maintain. So in taking photographs of maple fruit of every single one of our taxa, I got to know the form, the function, looking at them, so that when you're walking in the woods and you're looking down on snow and you see these, like, beech seeds that have shifted off and you're walking right by them, you can look down onto the snow and say, I know what kind of a beech that is.
Yeah.
Because you've got your diagnostics. It's just really wonderful.
Yeah.
Along with having nightmares of maple seeds through my head, I love looking at them, and I love knowing what they are and knowing how they grow.
I was astounded at the diversity of the shapes, sizes, you know, the detail. The differences were amazing, because that's kind of like the most iconic seed you can think of, tree seed. You know, it's what you peel and stick on your nose as a kid. You know,
rhinoceros. Exactly.
Yeah.
We all
did that. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And most kids don't even think about it as a seed.
No, it's
just
a thing to kick around on the sidewalk.
And now as gardeners, we think of oh my God, you know, when I have
to rake these up.
Oh, and how
they're
many?
They're going to go to seed, and now I'm going to be weeding them forever.
Oh, we weed maple seedlings.
Yes, of course,
they
of course.
Do germinate easily.
We found some really rare maple seed, and we had some really neat stories happen with some of them that were really interesting. Some of them, there's a certain type of species of maple seed that doesn't lie flat. It sort of sits up on the embryo like a sail and blows in the wind. So they're all sort of sitting up. underneath the tree.
Oh, gorgeous.
And you can see how that sort of blowing wind effect will make it become a drill bit almost and drill that embryo into the ground so that it can germinate as it goes back and forth and back and forth. It's really was wonderful. We had never seen that before, but by looking at the seed up close and personal, you really got a glimpse of what that engineering skill and design is all about.
Okay, let me ask you this. Let's go for a second to the Arnold Arboretum and to the history and the collection. Can you just enlighten our listeners about that?
Yeah, the Arnold was started. An institute, along with, it belongs to Harvard, the Harvard University. Mm-hmm. Our first director was Sargent, a very important gentleman in his own right, and sent out collection plant hunters. Our first very most famous one was sent by Veatch. Sargent sent him out Ernest China Wilson, out in the early 1900s to collect plants for the Arboretum in China. And he made a number of wonderful expeditions. That's where the beautiful sequoia was discovered, and the Davidia, and many other wonderful plants. He also, Sargent, worked with a number of people, as well as Frank Meyer, we then have wonderful collections. The George Russell Shaw was part of the Arnold Arboretum. It's one of the greatest arboreta in the United States, and one of the oldest.
And that's what I was going to say. It's one of the oldest collection houses. And I mean, this really predates any sort of government program in horticulture, right?
Yes.
This is like, you know, on par with Kew, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And those are that we do a lot of work with our colleagues at Kew in Edinburgh and Kew in London as well.
Right. And they got a much longer start. You know, they had a couple of centuries head start. So we're not doing too badly, Julie, considering. Right?
You're absolutely right.
You know, when we decide as Americans to go do something, to send Meyer out there to come back with thousands of new kinds of plants, you know, and I love that the USDA was funding him. Do you know? I mean, I don't know if the USDA is doing any of that anymore. And we're only talking about 100 years ago, a little bit over 100 years ago, that the USDA felt it was important enough. And I say this because we're on a radio station that's all about food. You know, they felt it was important enough to pay for somebody to go for multiple years to go collect food, you know, not just ornamental crops, of course, that's important too, but food crops,
right?
To see what else.
Well, how else are we going to stabilize the prairie? Come the Dust Bowl.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. I mean, you were talking about soybeans. I mean, Meyer was one of the ones who brought back soybeans,
right? Right.
And grasses,
right?
To stabilize soil,
right?
It is wonderful. It's interesting. I attended a lecture years ago at the Arnold by one of our colleagues there who had been documenting collection trips over 100 years and how they dipped. And it was he graphed it out for us. It was really interesting.
I'd like to hear that lecture.
The sort of thrusts of certain directors of the Arnold Arboretum or thrusts of what was going on in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how it sort of ebbed and flowed. Very, very interesting.
Right. Yeah. Who did that lecture? I'd love to look that up.
I don't remember, but I could get that information for you. I'm writing it down right now so I do not forget.
Yeah. I mean, and so what are you cataloging? So you are digitizing the existing seeds that are in the collection, and then you're also doing new work, new things that are found.
Yes.
That's what's amazing, is that you are bridging two worlds. It's you have the best job again.
Well, it is wonderful, and I'll never. I mean, there's always job security in this because there's always new seed, and we're coming up with all sorts of interesting things that happen to seed that we need to try and document. The one thing that is a goal of mine within the next 5 years, and I'm afraid I don't have that science under my belt. That technology is working with scanning electron microscopes, which will be my next sort of research haunt of getting that technology under my belt.
Uh-huh.
Because that you really get down to the nitty gritty, as I say, component level to these seeds. I can only get so close. You know, I get to centimeters and millimeters. You know, a centimeter being the thickness of a dime, and a millimeter sort of about the width of a straight pin. So we're getting pretty small with the work that I do. But with scanning electron microscopes, you really, really can see what's going on.
Yeah.
I've seen lovely work by scientists who are working with Lamiaceae, with mints and things in the mint family, which is a huge, amazing family. Most of our herbs come from that family. And they show the surface of the leaf, and you see the little trichome hairs, but in between that you see these beautiful clear sort of clear paperweight bubbles, and those are the oils of a mint leaf.
Oh, I'd love to see that.
That's the coolest thing. And all I can think of is, I want to learn how to do that.
Yeah.
So here I am.
That's great.
That's my next goal.
Well, hang on, Julie. We have to take a break. Hang on. You're listening to We Dig Plants on Heritage Radio Network.
Today's program was brought to you by Rolling Press. Rolling Press is a family-run digital and offset print house that brings together eco-friendly methods, ethical practices, and personalized service. Using environmentally responsible papers, non-toxic inks, and wind power, Rolling Press represents the harmony of traditional craftsmanship and mindful sustainability. Rolling Press offers advice on reducing paper waste and energy consumption, helping you save money and minimize your carbon footprint. For more information, visit rollingpress.com.
Hi, welcome back to We Dig Plants. I'm Carmen DeVito.
And I'm Alice.
We're here with Julie McIntosh Shapiro, who works at the Arnold Arboretum. Julie, are you with us?
Yes, I certainly am. Hi.
Okay, good. Well, I want to ask you a little bit about your traveling around and your documentation projects.
And some of the new stuff that you're photographing.
Yes, tell us about that.
Well, some of the new things are work that I've been doing with another project over at the Harvard Herbaria in Panama and in Spain, taking photographs of native plants there in the jungles and out in the sort of deserts up there. I fell in love with a certain type of a plant, and I would go out every year to different states of the western part of the United States and photograph those plants in situ and meet people who had like-minded Jones as I did of this type of a plant.
And are you talking about penstemons?
But the new things are keeping me pretty much in Panama and in Europe at this time. I don't have any expeditions coming up lately, but my last one was just this past September in Panama, and it was really very fruitful. We had a great time. Got a lot of work done.
And what plant is bringing you to Panama? Is it penstemons?
No, I'm afraid they don't have them down there.
Oh, okay.
But it's mostly tropical plants
right.
that we're looking at, palms, orchids, poinsettia family plants, euphorbias, that type of thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
And are you photographing the seeds and the plants in situ?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And you know, the problem with being a seed photographer is that a digital carpologist is that when plants are in flower, they're usually not in seed.
Yes.
Oh, right, right.
So that means I have to make two trips, and if I'm going up 11,000 feet or something like that, and it's in flower, I mean, I have people that scan for me to see what the plants are doing at a present time, or I document them so that I remember where to go back to at a certain time, how many months ahead, or before to see it in flower, or after to collect seed or photograph the seed. So sometimes you get out to a place, or you climb up to a place, and it takes you all day, or 2 days, or 3 days, and there's nothing there because a buffalo has chewed it up, or a tractor has come through, rabbit has eaten it, or you never really know, and
right.
then you have to just say goodbye and go back and try again.
Well, they're not funding expeditions like they used to, that you can go for a year or two, right? That would be great.
Wouldn't that be wonderful? I would love it. I mean, I'm fine in a teepee, man. Fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, what was the most surprising find from Panama on this last expedition? What did you find that was unusual?
Well, as a matter of fact, not this year, but last year. One of my colleagues discovered a new euphorbia, which was quite nice. I mean, we always think we have enough of those plants. It's a huge family. And, of course, it was growing right by a river in plain sight. It's been growing there probably forever, saying, look at me, guys, I'm over here.
Yeah.
You've never seen me before. Come on. and we finally got it. We finally got over there and said, oh, this is totally new. Cool. So papers have been written about it, and it's been documented now. And the photography that I did was part of the documentation. So it was really quite rewarding and fun to be with someone, a colleague who's discovered something brand new in the world.
Yeah, that must have been a fun night in the tent.
It was fun. We
hip flask and all. You know there's hip flasks on those trips.
So here's a question.
Say no more.
Here's a question for you. I'm going to go under the sea for a minute. Is there much work going on in seaweed?
Oh, why do you ask me that, may I ask?
The reason I ask is that there, at the turn of the century, there was a British photographer, and I can't think of her name right now. A client of ours actually curated a show. It was at the Drawing Center. I'm sorry, I can't think of her name right now. But she did all these kind of sun prints and photography of the seaweed that would wash up on shore. In England, and it's a beautiful, beautiful catalog. Unfortunately, it's out of print. But I just wondered if Harvard, being Harvard, had any of this collection. Like,
I don't know. That's it's funny that you said seaweed, because one of my projects in my little bag of tricks is to document the seed of seaweed.
Ah.
Since most people don't know what it looks like. Now, a lot of seaweed is not doesn't produce seed, of course, but there are seaweeds that produce seed, and those are the things that I want to document. It's funny that you should mention seaweed, because that really is that's a very cool project. But amongst the collections that we've got now, where I'm working presently at the Herbaria in Cambridge, are cryptogamic collections, and that falls under seaweed. We have a lot of pressed seaweed that's been pressed for hundreds of years on sheets of paper and documented. But I don't know about this one, and I have a feeling that, there are not a lot of seaweed researchers.
No. And the thing is, I think about it a lot, because, of course, there's a lot of animal studies, you know. And I have a 2.5-year-old, so I'm like embedded in National Geographic shark videos. But there's a lot of research in the ocean that we need to, you know, that could be very life-saving to us as humans.
Absolutely. And absolutely. I mean, I'm in Massachusetts here. I'm right near HUI, you know, the Oceanographic Institute.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
Pairing with those guys doing a project on seaweed seeds would be really quite lovely and wonderful.
Well, if you need an assistant.
There you go.
There. I've handed you a project. Now we just got to get the funding for it.
Yep. That's usually when you're doing these kind of exciting things that outside of your institutions, you have to. I'm afraid those are the kind of things that you got to think about.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
There is money out there. There is funding out there. But the work you have to do to get it is not prohibitive, but it just takes a long time. And I mean, if you really believe in these projects, you just have to go get it and go work on it and get it done.
It's called Pfizer. Pfizer money.
Yeah. Yeah.
So here's another question. Carmen and I, a year ago this month, mm-hmm. we went to Kew. And we actually went for a botanical art exhibit.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
we got a tour mm-hmm. of the archivist for Kew, and I wonder if you know him. His name is Chris Mills, and he's in charge of the Biodiversity Library at Kew, and I wondered if you are working with him at all.
I'm not, but Chris works, I know his name, Chris works for the Biodiversity Heritage Library.
Yeah.
And that is, isn't that what it is?
Yes.
The BHL.
Yes. Yeah, BHL. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's the director of our botany library, Judith Warneman, is also part of BHL, one of the founding members of BHL,
uh-huh.
and all those guys work together. As a matter of fact, they just published a book that I brought down to my friend in D.C. this past weekend that I'm published in. I shot some of the photography for the book. It's a curation book that Q put out, published, that each chapter was written by a colleague. Regarding curation. And Chris was involved in that, definitely. But we haven't come into contact, the two of us, mostly.
Okay.
We just know each other's names.
Right. So tell me, what are you working on right at the minute, like tomorrow? What are you going to do tomorrow? What's your day like tomorrow?
Tomorrow is going in after a little bit of a break and working on photographing plant specimens and mounting specimens from collections from the 1930s and 1940s.
How do you mount them?
I'm working on mounting plant specimens from our collections that are historic collections that have never been mounted before on, you know, the paper sheets, the herbarium sheets.
Mm-hmm.
They've been sitting, waiting for someone... waiting for someone to mount these specimens so that researchers can see them and that they can be then sourced into our collection for the next 100 years.
So tell me about the mounting process. What is the paper, vellum? Like, what is it?
It is so you press a plant the way you do it in a book, but botanists press them in plant presses.
Mm-hmm.
They press them in presses under pressure and with heat. The plants are dried, and then they're leaved into usually newspaper of the time and newspaper of the area that they are in. In other words, the specimens I've been mounting the last month from 1919 have been from Oklahoma, a botanist from Oklahoma. And so all of his specimens were leaved inside folds of the Oklahoma, I forget what the Oklahoma Examiner, I think that was that's what it was, and dated 1919 during the war.
Okay.
And you open up this old newspaper from 1919 with where bread was a nickel and all this other kind of jazz and soldiers and fashion and everything. And there is a plant that he collected with his label and his writing and any pertinent information. Sometimes he collected seed. Sometimes he collected the root because it was diagnostic of some sort, and the leaves and flowers if it were in flower. I take that and I lay it out on a piece of archival plant paper, which is a harder, you know, thicker type of a paper, add his label, add packets so that I can put any seeds inside, any extraneous leaves, and I arrange the plants so that botanists from now on, so you're thinking, okay, from today for 100 years, I need someone to be able to look at this plant and see everything they need to see.
Right.
So you get the Boston Globe as you walk into...
So it's
amazing. I mean, when researchers go to China, they're all Chinese newspapers.
Right.
When they go to Latin America, they're all Latin American. Russia. It's quite amazing. And things that have been sitting for, you know, for 100 years, for 90, 70, 70, 80 years,
right.
You get sort of carried away, and the plants are still, some of these campanula that are blue are still blue from 1919.
I was going to ask you about that, Julie. I mean, how was newspaper used because of its economy and just being available? I mean, they weren't thinking about acidity levels and archival, you know, they just needed something to sort of put in between, right? They weren't thinking long term.
Yeah. And a lot of times, I mean, the glues and the adhesives and the kind of preparation they would put on paper were really lethal back in the day. I mean, they used all sorts of lethal chemicals to dry out plants, and the glues were not lethal, but the glues were made of, you know, the lac bug. They were sort of shellacky.
Yeah.
And after a number of years of sitting flat with poundage on top of them of other plant specimens, they would sort of crack off, or the leaves would crack and the shellac would stay. So I do a lot of repair work for some of these old historic collections. I just finished photographing, though, some herbariums that are really historic, and we're very proud of them. We're about to release some visuals and history about Henry David Thoreau's herbarium that he had. It's really quite a wonderful collection, and it was given. It's been passed around for 100 years or so after he died, and Harvard was bequested this, and it was given to the botany library, and the library asked me if I wouldn't photograph these herbarium specimens that Thoreau collected. And you see his handwriting across them in pencil. It was just a thrill to do that. So we're going to be releasing those sometime this year, I think. So that'll be really exciting for people to see those once, you know, never before seen.
Is it going to be an exhibit for the public, or is it going to be strictly for...
It'll probably be a special exhibit and also an online exhibit, too, so that you really can see those herbarium specimens really close up.
Well, it was lovely to look at the Myers photographs.
Yes.
And I, you know, there I was sitting in my living room in my pajamas drinking coffee, but I was on the other side of the earth, you know?
Yeah.
And it was amazing. It was amazing. Yeah. So what a fantastic, huge world you're working in. Your fingers are just touching everything. It's amazing.
Yeah,
I am so fortunate. I tell you, man, there are at least a million specimens that I have to start that I'm going to be looking at. So I'm going to be around for a while.
Well, you know, it's funny. It's sad. You know, you were talking about all the work, you know.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, God, you know, Forbes and USA Today never say, "Hey, here's a field you should go into," you know. But yet here's like,
you know, if someone had told me that when I was, you know, singing on stage at the Mud Club, I would have said, "Excuse me, but you might want to have another beer."
Yeah.
And well, we missed you at the venue at GWH.
Your singing debut, or not your debut?
Did you get to hear any of that? That was sort of fun.
No, we missed that night. I forget where we were. We were probably in some kind of food coma.
I think I just had a migraine after.
I just think someone dared me, you know, and I'm good for a dare.
Well, we're coming to the end, Julie, but I want to ask you, okay, so let's say you have unlimited budget, you have a benefactor, okay, who will send you wherever you want to go to photograph whatever you want to photograph. Where would you go?
Well, I'll tell you one of my secret projects. I want to photograph seed from lighthouses.
Wow.
Oh.
And that's all I'm going to tell you, because I want my benefactor to call me at home.
That's, okay, here's one more like ridiculous question.
Yeah.
In the food world, everybody always asks the chefs, it's like the big question, for your last meal, if you were in prison, what would you eat? If you, on your coffin, what plant do you want on your coffin?
Good one.
Oh, that is a good one. Let's see.
And I'm assuming dried, Julie, right? Pressed?
Dried? Okay.
No, whatever.
Oh, live.
Yeah,
live too.
Well, sort of more Tisha Adams-y, wouldn't it?
Okay.
But that's okay. I can deal with that. Since my birthday is Halloween, whatever.
Oh, that's fun.
Let's see. What would it be? It would be a... Wow. Yeah. I start thinking of... The largest those navy blue and cream birds of paradise.
Ah,
yeah.
I thought you were gonna
long, and they're like metal flake navy blue and cream.
Yes.
Oh.
And they're huge.
Yeah.
And they grow on plants that are maybe, I don't know, 20, 16, 18 feet tall. Yeah, you could lay one of those down.
That's
That'd be cool.
Awesome.
See, I thought you were going to say penstemon.
Yeah.
No, penstemon are they're my little dream plant. I just, not only do I love the plants, they're like snapdragons, but
yeah.
They're brilliant. The breadth of that family is so unreal. I've been on my hands and knees in the middle of the Nevada desert at like 100 and something degrees, photographing a little penstemon that's only about a half an inch. And we still don't know who the heck pollinates the goddamn thing.
Right.
Really?
Right.
Oops, sorry, I probably swear it again.
That's okay.
But we don't even know, and it's so low to another penstemon species that is at least 5.5 feet tall.
Right.
With the most bulbous pink, you know,
grotesque,
like
big
petticoat like pink bubblegum flowers that look like you took a snapdragon and blew like oxygen into it until it just like almost exploded. They're just amazing, and then every color in between. So I'm in that family forever. And the seeds are just fabulous.
Good. Well, you have just illuminated our world with all of your work, and thank you for everything that you do. It's been a fantastic 45 minutes.
Unfortunately,
thank you,
it's come
very
to
much.
An end.
It was a pleasure and an honor to speak to both of you guys.
Okay.
Thank you, Alice and Carmen. And thank you, Jack. That was I love the sound effect, by the way. That was cool.
And Julie, if we come up to Boston, we'll come up and see you.
I would love it. Be my guest.
Good. Okay. We're there.
Well, thank you for listening to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. The show was produced and engineered by Jack Inslee. Please follow us on Facebook. That's how you guys get free stuff, right? And Twitter, and we are going to set up an Instagram account.
Someday. Speaking of photographs.
Coming soon, so stay tuned, and we'll see you next week.
Happy gardening.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.